Moving now to national news, a kind of strange decision on the intersection of tech and politics. A three-judge panel in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. Two judges, by the way, appointed by George W. Bush, one from Barack Obama, have ruled against Donald Trump. Specifically, they have ruled that because he uses his Twitter account for public business, he cannot block people who criticize him on Twitter, which he has done quite liberally in the past. We're joined now by one of the attorneys who worked on that lawsuit. Carrie DeSalle is at the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Why don't you start by laying out the legal principle? How does the court get to tell Donald Trump who he can and cannot block on Twitter?
Well, the first conclusion in the court's opinion is that Donald Trump's @RealDonaldTrump Twitter account is, in fact, an official account. It's an extension of his office as president, and he himself has described it as such. His staff has described it as such. And the way that he uses the account is clearly official in nature. He makes announcements for the first time on Twitter and effectively conducts the office of the presidency via Twitter these days. So the court concluded fairly easily that the @RealDonaldTrump account was an official account, meaning that it's subject to the First Amendment. You and I as private citizens going about our daily lives are not restricted by the First Amendment, but government officials, most importantly, are. So that was the first main conclusion that the Second Circuit drew. And then from there, it was fairly easy to conclude that President Trump had violated the First Amendment rights of some of his critics on Twitter, whom he had blocked purely on the basis of their viewpoints. It's a foundational principle under First Amendment law that a government official cannot discriminate on the basis of an individual's viewpoint.
And so here, the action of blocking, for those of our listeners who are not fluent in Twitter, the action of blocking both bars someone from seeing what you post and also blocks you from replying to or interacting with whatever you post.
That's right. If you want to draw an analogy to a town hall, there aren't so many of those anymore these days, but effectively, it would be kicking somebody out of the town hall on Donald Trump's Twitter page.
So this intuitively makes sense to me, but then leads my mind to another place, which is there has been this push to get Twitter and other social platforms to be more aggressive about taking people purveying hate speech off their platforms. And I guess my question is, could this legal principle possibly extend to a place where the courts stop Twitter from taking people off its platform because that'll cut off their access to their president?
Not necessarily. So the first kind of conclusion that I mentioned that the court drew in this case was that this was an official government action, that it was the president as president who was blocking his critics from his Twitter account, and that the Twitter account was a government, an official government account. Twitter is a private company. So Twitter itself is not bound by the First Amendment, and Twitter may decide to assert its own First Amendment rights to determine which people get to speak on its platform. So the fact that a government official is not able to exercise the control that he has on a Twitter page to silence his critics does not mean that Twitter is bound by the same First Amendment prohibition.
It seems weird to have the public business operating on a privately owned platform because, in theory, Twitter could change its algorithm tomorrow and Donald Trump's post just wouldn't show up in the feeds of any Democrats. They could decide they don't want any more political food fights on their platform.
That's true. There have been previous Supreme Court cases in which a government office or a town or county rented out space in a private theater, for example, to host government business. And just because the space that was being used in that instance was ultimately a privately owned space didn't mean that the government was therefore free to ignore the restraints that the First Amendment imposes on what the government specifically that space. And the same principle holds here. So whatever control the president has with respect to his Twitter page, he can't use that in a way that violates the First Amendment.
Speaking of Carrie DeSalle, staff attorney at the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University, one of the attorneys on a case that just got a favorable ruling at the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. It is stopping President Donald Trump from blocking critics on Twitter. This has not instantly restored everybody who had their account blocked by Donald Trump. Can you talk about the real-world impacts of the decision?
Sure. So the individual plaintiffs that we represented in this case, these are seven individuals from across the country in different professions. They have been unblocked, and we have followed up with the government in the course of this litigation to request that other people who've reached out to us would be unblocked as well. And the government has unblocked a number of those individuals, but I think in the near future, we'll be following up to request that the government unblocks anybody that the president has blocked on the basis of their viewpoints.
But do you have to petition on behalf of each individual person? You can't get a blanket order out of the court just saying, hey, don't block people.
Yeah, in the Second Circuit, which covers New York, Connecticut, and Vermont, the law is now that it is unconstitutional for a public official to block someone from a social media account that's run as an extension of that person's public office. So in the Second Circuit, and people who are living in the Second Circuit will enjoy this protection going forward. It would take a Supreme Court decision or a nationwide injunction, which we don't have in this case, to extend that protection to individuals across the country. That said, we think that this decision, I mean, we obviously argued in favor of the decision that the court ultimately reached, so we're quite pleased with it, and we think that it should inform the way that public officials act from here on out. But it's true that if, say, a person in California were to be blocked by the president tomorrow, it might require a separate lawsuit to vindicate that person's First Amendment rights.
What's the likelihood of the Trump administration taking this to the Supreme Court?
That's a great question. We're not sure. We're waiting to see whether or not the Department of Justice and the president decide to petition for review by the Supreme Court in this case. The judges on the Second Circuit panel were somewhat critical of the government for using government resources to continue to defend what they were characterizing as the president's personal conduct. But we'll have to wait and see whether or not the DOJ and President Trump really want to take this up to the Supreme Court.
Was this an ambiguous area of federal law, or is this just another case where the Trump administration kind of, you know, broke it till a judge told them not to?
We view this as an extension of foundational First Amendment precedent into the digital age. So there were no clear cases addressing the First Amendment rights that we raised in this on social media platforms. But the principles are longstanding. So this is a situation in which we think, you know, we are making new law to a certain extent, but it has a long heritage.
Yeah. All right. Carrie DeSalle, thanks for taking time to speak to us about your case.
Thank you very much.
Carrie DeSalle is a staff attorney at the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University, attorney who represented a collection of plaintiffs who sued Donald Trump for blocking them on Twitter. Their case has now gone all the way up to a three-judge panel on the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, that is New York and neighboring states, returned a unanimous decision telling Donald Trump he has to unblock their clients. And by the way, two of those three judges were appointed by George W. Bush, so this does not appear to be a particularly divisive issue amongst the federal judiciary.
I'm sorry, Brian. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be unprofessional. I don't know what else to do, but it's just bizarre. Like, this is more of the as the White House turned. Really? Really, there had to be a lawsuit? Really? To tell the president he couldn't block people on Twitter? I mean, can we just sit in the absurdity of all of this just a minute?
He was angry at a Greenpeace campaigner for repeatedly posting animated GIFs of Greenpeace members dropping a banner critical of Donald Trump in response to everything Trump put up.
I mean, maybe I would cry if I wasn't laughing, but
Okay, but here's what I think is weird. The courts are now regulating the president's use of Twitter, but they are not regulating Twitter's use of Twitter.
Mm.
Twitter can change who sees and interacts with Donald Trump's posts mm-hmm. on a moment's notice.
Mm-hmm. Hm.
It's very strange to see our commons, and I think it's, town hall is a good analogy.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Only the town hall is privately owned and operated, right? So the First Amendment law is applying to the government officials when they step into that town hall, but not Bill Graham Presents or whoever owns it. You know what I
mean? Right. It's just a scarier and scarier world that we live in. Glad I'm on the other side of my life on this planet.
Whoa, that took a dark turn.
It's
fast,
not,
Kat
it's
Brooks.
It's not a dark turn. Transitioning is not dark. Transitioning is light and beauty.
And you've got a young kid, too.
I do.
Good
do.
Luck, honey. I'm out.
Now that took a dark turn.
It's 7:30 in the morning. The program's Up Front. My name is Brian Edwards Teeger.
My name is Kat Brooks.
Coming up in the second half of this hour, we're going to take a roundup of where efforts to make some progress in the state legislature on California's affordable housing crisis stand. We'll speak to Anya Lawler, policy advocate with the Western Center on Law and Poverty. Next.
After the news.